So there are each moment in life, no matter if there is ignorance or not, no matter whatever happens, there must be also pachaya conditions there and realities.
Without pachaya, nothing can arise.
Even the situations cannot arise without...
What you take for situation must be realities, one moment at a time.
So then we can tell it's nimitta, the
Pardon?
Situation. A situation is nimitta.
Always nimitta, because okay. Who can experience just one reality which arises and falls away in split seconds? But one does not know that now they are all nimittas only. We think that they are so real, like people and things, but actually only the nimitta of realities which arise and fall away in split seconds all the time. Like watching movies. Like now?
And the difference between the nimitta in bhavana and the nimitta now is a concept. But it can be a concept as well in bhavana. I'm not sure.
Bhavana is kusla or akusla. But nimitta now can be nimitta of akusla. So one has to know what's meant by bhavana, the development of calmness or the development of right understanding, reality. That's why for calmness it's called samatha vipassana. In Pali, they don't know Thai, they don't know English, so they use the word samatha bhavana. But for us, samatha bhavana is not Thai or English. That's why we have to understand what they say in daily life is the development of calmness. And when it's vipassana bhavana, vipassana is the panya, which insight the true nature of realities. For them, they understand that. For us, we have to translate or interpret and try to understand what's meant by that word. But it's the understanding of reality right now. And can there be vipassana bhavana without the theoretical understanding or intellectual understanding at all? So, the nimitta now, when there's understanding, one knows that where is that object, even visible object, which is seen now? It's completely gone from moment to moment. But the succession of the arising and falling away conditions, nimitta, no one can stop the nimitta of that which arises and falls away. But panya can see that one lives in nimitta world. Or not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, when there's understanding of reality, one understands that nimitta of vipassana and nimitta of samatha is different.
In samatha, can we say it is nimitta of the concept? Because in samatha, the object is concept. But I thought the other day we were saying there cannot be nimitta of concept.
We have to study further and carefully because reality can be object of samatha, that's all.
Yeah, otherwise it's a concept. Mm-hmm.
And since we don't know about the arupa jhana, so how can we know that?
So then we're talking about in samatha nimitta of a concept because.
The understanding is of very little, but lots of words in Tipitaka and commentaries which need the studying carefully to understand better and better. Like whether realities can be object of samatha or not. In general, usually, it cannot because we don't talk about the arupa jhana.
In daily life, I remember too,
It's about Maranusati, thinking about death, and Puttanusati, thinking about Buddha. This is a bhavana, a simple bhavana that we can understand and we can use in daily life according to condition. Can be that why we develop our understanding at the same time. Can that be right?
What about your opinion?
No, sorry.
What about Marana Sati?
Marana
Sati.
At the time of death, the... Okay. No, sorry. No.
Do you have heard about
Maranasati? Yeah, it's in the Visuddhimagga. It's the, one of the objects, and it was explained, like, I think it was one of the 40 objects, so... But it starts there, and it is said, like, with a lot of... how to reflect upon the death, but then the death is explained. It's not like the conventional death. It's like arising and falling away, I think. And there was like the death, what is death in the life. So it said like the termination of life comes. Like this could, I don't know, I don't remember that, but there was told something that we reflect wisely upon that object, that what death is. And then we reflect by the particular way, like, and it was told like this by Teras, but that was like, how to reflect, because we can reflect, oh, I will die tomorrow, and we can do it with worries and what will happen to my family and everything, and this is all akusala. So that's why they gave, the teras explained the object, how to do this, because they knew what kind of reflection supports the bhavana, and maybe also satipatthana, because, I don't know, this is the 40 objects, so one of them is the Marana, about death.
So, like even now, death can come any moment at all, and it can be a condition to reflect wisely on opportunity for developing understanding and appreciating how very short life is, actually just one moment. So, reflecting wisely even now can be conditioned for calm, but not a matter of doing anything or reciting or trying to have it, but just naturally in daily life there can be reflection on death, usually maybe with worry or fear, but can be with wise considering and calm, because it can come any time at all. And actually, it's just one moment, followed by another moment, just like now.
Let's talk about the words sati and marana. So, sati or anusati and marana. So that can be just marana sati or marana nusati, right? So what is sati and what is marana?
Having sati of death, knowing that death is a reality, it's something that as patisandhi citta arise, so must chuti citta arise. So it's.
But the question is, what is sati? What does sati mean?
Well, sati, no, sati is.
Death is
it's one instant of citta.
Marana,
yeah, death. Being mindful of this reality, I think.
I think that we talked about the meaning of sati or anusati, right? like the recollection. See, so what is the recollection on marana or death?
Because sati awareness arises of all wholesome cittas, so it doesn't have to be awareness of reality. So it means sati is awareness, and anusati would be sati that follows, I think. So it refers to wise reflection and awareness of death. So reflecting how death can bring calm at this moment with the kusala citta.
So it's reflecting or recollecting?
Either.
I believe it's recollecting.
How? When?
It happens.
Now? Yep. Recollection, please.
It's something that happens.
So what something is the recollection?
Calling to mind. comes into the mind.
Just come to the mind.
Come to the mind.
How many words? Or it doesn't matter.
Well, it's the kusala citta that thinks about how death can come at any moment, how short, how fragile life is, that sort of thing. I don't think there's any fixed formula for thinking. It can be a thought in any words, but it is on the subject of
the... And what's the consequence of it?
Calm.
Do we have to say that now we have the recollection of marana, or at moment of satipatthana, with understanding that if it's not this moment, it can never be, because death can come any moment. So whatever conditions, kusala, on calmness or satipatthana or vipassana, not just think about it and feels better or worry about it. So all depends on right understanding, on panya. Otherwise, we just think about it in our own way, but actually it brings to more understanding of whatever appears. To those who understand satipatthana, maranasati is moment of developing satipatthana. It can be a condition, not just have to think about it first and then have satipatthana after.
So can we say the result is sangvega?
Again. Whatever, kusala. Whatever you like to call it.
But if it does condition satipatthana, then it's sangvega.
Or if you don't call it, it is.
Then you have to call it, yeah.
I think that what you're saying is because the aim of all the teachings is detachment from the idea of self and understanding of realities. So if there are conditions now to reflect on death wisely or anything else, then whatever arises can be object of understanding. That's all. Is this the point?
It doesn't mean that one has to think all the time or reflecting all the time about death, but it depends on what after that. What kind of goose lies there? It seems like we learn a lot, we heard a lot, different words, but do we really understand the meaning or the relation between all these words? That's why what's the use of just reflecting on marana or death. See, more than that, to understand reality, not just thinking about it, just death will come anytime.
So back to burning and linking everything together, we can say that at that moment of maranasati, or reflecting wisely on death by conditions, there is burning, and moment of satipatthana, or understanding that reality, there is also burning at each moment.
Burning. Can you say more, Sarah?
Well, because I understand that it, when there is any samatha, bhavana, for example, if it is moments of wise reflection on death by conditions, at that moment there is understanding which is burning the attachment to sense object for a moment, but at that moment of calm, and at the moment of satipatthana, or the moment of understanding reality, at that moment it is the beginning of burning defilement, which has to be burnt enough until Lokutra cittas can arise and completely burn the defilements for good. But it has to begin at the moments of understanding, or the moments of calm now with understanding.
In the sense of burning, can we use
the meaning as cause, not the other, to arise? Like burning defilement causes defilement not to arise. Can that be used to understand? Or maybe anger, dosa burns. That means dosa cause not kusala citta to arise. Can that be understood this way?
Yeah, I think burning is like a temporary burning. It's not like a eradicating anything. It's just burning in that when there are conditions for jhana citta to arise, jhana citta burns
unless
when it arises.
Unless it's lokutra jhana, then it is eradicating
it. Yeah, it depends, yes. Depends.
But I think Jagrit's question was whether burning means as a condition for something not to arise again. So if it's the beginning of burning of defilements, then it is like the beginning of wearing away those defilements until it's finally eradicated.
Lokutra
jhana is complete burning, eradicating, but it has to begin with understanding, like even beginning to understand correctly in theory now is the beginning of burning away defilements through understanding. When you mentioned at the beginning, Jan, when you were talking to Lucas about being good, being friendly to others, as bringing less clinging to the idea of self, I can understand how metta, for example, being friendly, helpful to others, leads to less attachment. But you said less clinging to the idea of self. How does being friendly or good lead to less clinging to the idea of self?
Who is friendly?
Usually it's me. So,
if it's me being friendly, how does that lead to less, the idea of less clinging to the self? I understand how being friendly, if there are moments of kusala, moments of metta, or alopa, when one is being friendly to others, that is not with self, thinking of self, but would there not be moments of both, thinking self and not?
Yes, it must be like being friendly means be having metta for others. That's, mm. Yes, must be kusala.
Yes,
it must be kusala. Yeah.
I thought I heard something different there. Maybe not.
Okay.
In a day, do you think of yourself or of the others?
Mostly self. Sometimes
others. And when you think of the others, in what way?
Well, various ways.
Kusala or akusala?
A bit of both.
What is helpful?
Kusala.
Because at that moment you don't think of yourself.
That's right.
The more you can help the others, it shows that there is less attached to your own self so much.
Yes, I understand that. I think I misunderstood something. I think I misunderstood something or maybe misheard something Sarah said. Yes, I can see that. How when you're helping the others, it's less thinking of self.
Can everyone think of the others? Everyone.
Can they?
Only those who have accumulation.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And this can condition moment of thinking of the others, less thinking of oneself.
Yes.
Days ago, and there was the castle with the museum. Ajahn told that she has no accumulation to go there and see.
Joke.
As fast. Joke? Oh, all junk, yeah.
Even Kadang?
I don't understand.
Even Gdansk.
Oh, Gdansk. Even Gdansk.
Yeah. Gdansk. Because everyone forget Gdansk now.
No Gdansk.
Only once in lifetime or in the circle of birth and death. That's junk.
I think the maybe the point is that when one's being friendly or helpful to others, there's less attachment to self.
One way.
But Ajahn had said not only is there not less attachment, but she said less clinging to the idea of
less
self.
Less thinking about oneself.
Less thinking about oneself. Okay, less thinking. So that's what I wanted to clarify, because it may be lots and lots of metta, but still exhort the idea of some me who is being friendly. So only if there's understanding developed is there any less clinging to the actual idea of self.
And better than thinking about your own sake all the time.
Kojon places in Thai, and Kojon places, I guess, is going to Kojon places not by choice. Would it somewhat lead me to learn more things about lopa, tosa, or even more akusolatit, and then make me realize that the reality of this world? Would that make sense?
Places. Kojo places and Akojo places.
So your question is about going to
Akojo places, not by choice, by conditions. Would it somewhat help us to understand sometimes lopa happens? Would it help us to see, oh, this is my lopa happening, and we catch ourselves at that moment? Would that panya rises even in a Hojon situation or something like that?
I think she means gadangs.
So whether we're in Gdansk or in Thailand or we're here, actually they're just moments of seeing and hearing and thinking about what's seen, thinking about what's heard, attachment. So the teachings, the development always has to come back to this moment. So if lobha is arising now, it can be the object of attachment now. Seeing now can be the object of understanding. So actually it makes no difference whether we're in Gdansk or at home or here, just moments of seeing, hearing, attachment, any time, any reality, whatever appears. So we don't have to go to Gdansk or a special place to understand attachment, because there's so much attachment in a day anyway. But it always has to come back to this moment and what appears now, not waiting for another time or a special occasion or trying to catch the strong attachment later or yesterday, because yesterday's attachment has completely gone. Even half an hour ago's attachment when we looked at the swans on the river, completely gone. Only the attachment now, the seeing now, the visible object now, can be the object of understanding. So this is why Ajahn always emphasizes this moment. So whatever we're talking about, it has to come back to the understanding of what appears right now. So this is why we need to hear a lot about seeing and visible object, because the seeing of a visible object, then long, long story about Gdansk and the beautiful old buildings, or a long, long story about the different swans floating on the river. But actually, all that's seen is visible object, followed by a lot of thinking about it.
By what I mean, by not so much of Gdansk, but so much of at going to the bar or the club with friends, something like that. Should I avoid it completely, or it's conditioned? And do you know what I'm saying?
That whether then or now, whatever arises is by conditions. So now there are conditions to be sitting here, now the conditions for seeing to arise, for thinking to arise, maybe for not such strong attachment to arise, by conditions. If in 3 days' time back in Bangkok you're out at the nightclub, whatever way life goes, it's just different realities that are conditioned. So you can think, maybe I shouldn't go, and then go anyway. So it's whatever arises is by conditions. And even in the nightclub, there is seeing, there is hearing, there is attachment, there is thinking. There can be right understanding of realities anytime, anywhere.
Jonathan?
Yes. It depends on what kind of friends you go there, with good or bad.
Jonathan, considering you might need to add a bit more.
Would the reality snap more when your thosa is happening rather than thinking about, you know what I'm saying? If you go and then thosa or lobha is happening right then, right now, and it snap you so hard that you catches it and you remember it well, better than talking about it and thinking about when lobha or thosa is happening.
So you're saying if it's stronger lobha or stronger dosa, is it more likely to
be a condition for us to consider Dhamma? Well, in your experience, what's the answer? Because you've been to places, you've had stronger dosa, stronger lobha, so you should know the answer anyway. Right? It would. It would catch you better.
But I would prefer not to have.
So what you're saying is, you've, in your experience, you find there are more you're more likely to think of the Dhamma when lobha is strong and dosa is strong than when it's normal situation. Mm-hmm.